Well, now it's that time in the week where we review some of the big headlines of the past few days.
The world's top beer makers clink glasses on a mega merger. SAB Miller finally accepts a deal from AB InBev.
AB InBev is buying SAB's growth. As SAB's got good positions in emerging markets, AB InBev are probably world class at taking costs out of the organisations they acquire.
How far do you trust the reviews that you read online? The Sunday Times newspaper here in Britain decided to test how far you could get on false ebook reviews.
We started researching online, and there's a lot of dodgy Amazon authors who describe themselves as Kindle gold rushers.
The winner of the Nobel Prize in Economics has been announced. Scottish-born Professor Angus Deaton tells the programme why he's relieved inequality is now on the global agenda.
You know, there are good sides to inequality as well as bad sides, and we need to have that debate and understand it much better than it's understood.
Charles Farrell is European Markets Editor at the Wall Street Journal here in London. Megan Murphy is Bloomberg's Washington Bureau Chief, and I asked her first about the massive beer buyout.
You use the word massive, and just to put it a little bit into context, this mega deal, which is the third largest in history, if and when it goes through, would mean that three out of every team would have a 30% market share. They'd have 400 beer brands around the world, including eight of the top 10 best-selling beers in the U.S., a huge market. The size and scale is pretty unbelievable, the size of the financing they're lining up, the size of just what they'll be together as a company. But I think on the positive side, there is opportunity to really cut costs, to centralize the operations of SAB Miller, which has always run as a pretty decentralized organization in terms of their distributors around the world. The perils of this are, first of all, that they're going to have to offload some assets in the U.S. and in China to appease regulators, certainly on this. And I also think you have to look at slowing growth in emerging markets and how that hits and where they're really going to get the growth from. Craft beer brewers, as we all know, are really making a move. They're taking more and more share every year as people sort of upscale their drinking habits. And that's going to be a challenge as well.
Yeah, I want to pick up on that, Charles, because as a, let's say, a beer enthusiast myself, the whole craft beer market that Megan talked about, certainly in the UK, in Europe, and I know in the US, it's a huge thing. Is it a bubble that's about to burst?
Well, I'm not really sure that it's a bubble that's about to burst. It is big, it's growing, but it's not giant. You know, the still by volume, people drink a lot of what you might call kind of anonymous international lagers of the kind we're all familiar with. That remains a pretty big business by size. Obviously, the craft stuff is growing. But that's not to say that the big guys can't get into that, too. You know, they've been snapping up smaller breweries.
It's a great line. I'm going to use that in future. Do you want a beer or do you want an anonymous international lager? Megan, do you see that in the US? The small companies, what start as a microbrewery, they get bigger. They look increasingly tasty for a buyout.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you see that with Sam Adams, you know, which, you know, sort of one of the original perceived microbrewers here in terms of what they're doing. And Charles is right. They are just going to sort of where they can add the growth through acquisitions. They'll do it. That market, I think, is growing. But what I love at the States now is now for Budweiser's commercials, they run an ad that basically says mass production is great. You know, mass produced is where trying to sort of spin this argument on its head by sort of touting the sort of mass appeal of Bud. And for anyone who grew up in America like myself, you can't go to a baseball game or a football game without seeing that branding everywhere. So they always have a lot of marketing tricks up their sleeve in particular.
Okay, reluctantly we move on, but hey, we get to talk about books next. Although the slightly unsavory side revealed, I guess, Charles, but maybe not such a surprise.
Probably not. It's become quite difficult, I think, for everybody online, and not just books, but with a lot of things, to figure out what is real and what is fake.
How heartbreaking is it when your favorite vlogger turns out to be paid?
It's terrible. Well, we're all going to toot our own horns here, but I think this goes to the reason why it's important to have independent, you know, non-paid types of reviewers, such as the Wall Street Journal and Bloomberg and others have.
And of course, concern perhaps, Megan, for the small people, the people who depend on a plausible review that gets buzz going, that enables them maybe either as a small-scale producer of books or a small-scale writer of books to get into the big league.
Yeah, I mean, this is the first I've really looked at it in terms of books. I think this sort of cuts both ways. What is interesting about this, too, is just the army of people that are available at pretty low wages to write this kind of stuff is pretty vast. And there are companies who are always willing to exploit that. And then in the book market in particular, which is, you know, with Amazon, with the closure of independent chains, you know, with it sort of migrating to mass market, I mean, this can really make the crucial difference. So is this going to taint these kind of companies that use these kind of reviews to really mark out their independence and their market, and that look, it's vetted and this is why you should buy it?
I'm amazed that it only cost $5 or whatever it was to get that book about bonsai trees to the top of the UK gardening and horticultural ranking. I mean, living here in Britain, I can imagine that it is highly, highly competitive to get to the top of gardening
with
and horticulture.
Bonsai trees, which really aren't native to the UK, as we know.
All right. Okay. Final thoughts from both of you. We'll have to keep this fairly brief if you would, but the honor accorded to Mr. Deighton. Does this make him a truly historical figure in the field of economics, or do we go back to the old cliche about two economists, three theories, and instantly diminish anything that he may say? Let's start with Charles.
One thing that's particularly interesting about him is that he's not a theorist. I'm not an expert in this, but as far as I know, there is no like grand Deighton theorem of anything. He's an empiricist. He's somebody who's focused on data collection, on looking at how you can measure poverty, how you can measure inequality, the really kind of nitty-gritty stuff that's essential when you're debating in a lofty manner these big questions. So I think that some of the value of his work is the fact that it transcends what theories might be in vogue and really gets to the question of how you describe the world and how the science of economics, how you actually do it, is something that's pretty interesting.
Fantastic. You've given another handle for the program, debating big issues in a lofty manner. Your thoughts, Megan?
He did a radio interview with us after winning, and I thought he was so struck by his humility. And yes, part of the issues that he's talked about inequality and how that is a very nuanced debate that can cut both ways. But he said something in the podcast. He said he was really happy that one of his theories got mentioned on Orange is the New Black. I think there's just so many people that cheered this particular award in terms of really looking at stay away from the average, stay away from the aggregate. Those often present a misleading picture. And if anything, his work is about the value of really granular research into how issues like inequality really affect day-to-day people. And that, I think, is truly invaluable, and it's an award that was deserved.
Our thanks to Megan Murphy at Bloomberg and Charles Farrell at The Wall Street Journal.